This is All Saints Sunday, one of my favorites because I get a chance to talk a little bit about the saints, about what sanctity means, and why we're all called to be saints, and what in the world do we do celebrating a Sunday like this? Who are the saints that we're commemorating? And why in the world would somebody want to be a saint? I read when I prepared my sermon this week a quotation from somebody who remained anonymous, saying that a saint is somebody whose life has been insufficiently researched. So all of you who may have some skepticism with regard to saints can rejoice that some thoughtful, theologically apt person has been there before you. One of the things about the saints on All Saints Sunday is that we're not celebrating just the saints on the Christian calendar. We're celebrating all of the people who have had a powerful impress on each of our lives in ways that we would say made us better human beings. You've heard me say to you more than once that Thomas Merton's great definition of the spiritual life: the spiritual life is the whole of life, body, soul, mind, spirit, given to God in love. And so that means when we think about the spiritual life or the Christian life, we're talking about life. So if we're talking about life with regard to sanctity, it must have something to do with the way in which we understand the nature of being fully human as having something to do with what Christians call sanctity. You know, we've discovered, as we have done sufficient research, that a number of the saints in the Christian calendar were certainly uneven personalities, to say the least. Some of you may have read over the past 2 or 3 years some articles about Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And people have commented on how in the world is she somebody who was now on the fast track to sanctity when she exhibited certain characteristics, shall we say, of being difficult. You know? I was thinking when I was writing my sermon about Saint Jerome. Saint Jerome gave us the Vulgate Bible, the first vernacular Bible, which may sound funny to you all, but he translated from the Hebrew and the Greek into Latin. And this would be in the 4th and 5th century A.D. Saint Jerome was, as Sam Goldwyn of Metro Golden Mare used to say, in 2 words, impossible. You know, what was it about him that people thought might exhibit some aspect of sanctity? Was it his perseverance and his desire that people should be able to read the Word of God? Was it his own personal zeal for holiness? Was it his own desire that people become more aware of the historical, critical way in which we should understand the biblical text, even back in the 4th and 5th century? You know, those things are important. So maybe we think, well, I thought people who were saints only had to be people who looked like they were never touching the ground, were always about 6 inches off, were absolutely perfect, and never did anything or showed any temper or pique or arrogance or curmudgeonliness, if that's a word. Well, it turns out, no. So maybe we've got to think about sanctity in a new and more compelling way. In the Bible, saints are described as people who lived before the time of Christ, members of the new covenant in Jesus Christ, and a synonym for the Christian faithful. St. Paul would often write in his letters, he'd speak to the saints in somewhere, you know, Philippi or Corinth or whatever. It must have been a stretch in Corinth. I've told you that the Corinthian church was the church on the bleeding edge of the dysfunctional church movement. As time went on, you know, and people begin to think and theologize about the nature of sanctity, the church said a saint is somebody who's in heaven with God, someone who could intercede for the needs of the earthly church and respond to those needs, one who merited public honor and cultic recognition by the church. Cultic recognition means that worship, that is to say, not of them, but of their life and of the template that they constitute for spiritual growth and development, so that we remember them on the anniversary of their death. The original saints were the martyrs, those people who gave their life for their Christian belief. And the great churches in Rome, for example, are all built on the sites of the martyrdom of the apostles and the other great saints. And as time went on, people began to say, you know, there are people that we know in our own local communities who have expressed some species of what we would call sanctity, some connection, some congruence with God's purposes that stand out for us in such a way that we would wish to remember them and to pattern our lives after them, at least after those aspects of their character and spiritual nature that we find compelling and godly. So the way people got to be saints for the first 1,000 years was either by public acclamation in local communities or by episcopal decree. So this process that exists now in the Roman Catholic Church for making saints, there may be some compelling reasons in their view why there needs to be a lot of this institutional and bureaucratic process done in order to get to sanctity, but the Episcopal Church has retained the primitive way of understanding this. So the saints that are on our lesser calendar, that is to say, not the apostles that are the prayer book saints, those in the lesser feasts and fasts are both saints that have been recognized for 2 millennia nearly in some cases, but also those who are fairly contemporary, whose lives have exhibited either through heroic standing for economic justice and equity, for the spiritual life that is one that reaches out in love and concern for other people. Those are all things that we would wish to pattern our life after. And these celebrations were local. At my seminary, Neshota House, every year, on the feast of Jackson Kemper, the first missionary bishop of the Episcopal Church, it looked like central casting. Send us a group of black-robed seminarians to march to the cemetery where Bishop Kemper is buried and to offer prayers at his grave, which we did. It was quite something the first year that I did this and saw it. It moved me. So that's the source and origin of these. Sooner or later, of course, people began to say, let's not just take these local saints and make them so parochial that they're not known to everybody else, and let's integrate them into a calendar of saints that can be observed in other places, so that if you happen to be in Connecticut, you can remember Jackson Kemper, not just in Wisconsin. And there was an English deacon named Alcuin, who ran Charlemagne's grammar school, his choir school, in the 700s. And he said, you know, King, I don't know whether he said it that way, but Charlemagne was 7 feet tall. So no wonder they made him king, right? He said to the king, why don't we put this calendar together and use the saints from down in Italy and in Germany, where we're in France and in England, put them all together in a calendar. And the king said, make it so. And so through Alcuin, we have one of the first early calendars of the Christian church where the saints' days are now observed in a wider sense than merely in the local communities. So how would we think about what it would mean to live a life of sanctity? Well, one of the ways we do that, of course, is to think about the people that have touched us who we call part of the communion of saints. You know, somebody that you've known that has helped make you the person that you are in the affirmative sense, has made a contribution to the development and the nurture of your character as a human being. One of the ways of understanding character is living your life according to certain principles. So maybe you have learned some ways of being and relating from people that are important. It's necessary for us, you know, to move away from merely understanding the saints in an overly pietistical fashion, and to see that for Christian people over time, it is the characteristics of their humanity as well as the direct connection that people observed that they had with God in their ordinary living. One of the ways in which we could understand moving towards sanctity would be to see that we have a place to consult in the Book of Common Prayer called the Baptismal Covenant. And in a few minutes, Father Emerson will lead you in the renewal of your baptismal vows, where we will affirm our belief from the baptismal creed, and then we will once again speak the promises that were made at our baptism, or that we understand now to be part of this relationship that has been established between God and God's people. It is one of the important contributions that the Episcopal Church has made to the common life of the Anglican Communion over the past 40 years. The Episcopal Church, together with about four or five other provinces of the Anglican Communion, that in the renewal of their liturgy has understood that in the baptismal service, we need to affirm the covenantal nature of what it is that we're doing. That somehow we need to respond to the divine initiative begun in us, and that we need to affirm that the sanctity that we affirm comes from baptism is part of a pilgrimage and a process. And so that's one of the locations for understanding how we might understand sanctity. One of the other ways is to see how now on a daily basis could I check and see whether or not I'm making any spiritual progress. And one of the things that we say in the spiritual life in Christianity is that somebody who is moving towards spiritual maturity is able to reflect in relationship the fruits of the Spirit of God. God coming in an inward way to enlighten and strengthen us. Love, joy, kindness, peace, gentleness, self-control. Are these things a little bit easier for you to do, at least from time to time? This week, have you been a little bit more able to suffer fools a little more easily than you did before? Have you noticed that you have been the recipient of the grace and generosity of others who have suffered your presence? In some cases, no mean undertaking, I can assure you. You know? When we wake up and understand that, we begin to see that, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. And so the fruits of the Spirit constitute a guide: love, joy, kindness, peace, gentleness, self-control. Anglican Christians, Episcopalians, and those Christians related to the expression of Christianity worldwide, the third largest expression of Christianity in the world, the Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, and the Anglican Church are the three largest churches in the world. And one of the things that characterize the Anglican Church has been in its development, in its history, some affinity to Eastern Orthodox Christianity. Certainly the Elizabethan divines, those people who wrote about Anglicanism in the 16th century during the Elizabethan settlement, we discover historians that there was some voluminous correspondence in some cases between English divines and Eastern Orthodox Christians. And we discovered that there were some aspects of the lived experience of Christians in these two different traditions that are compelling. And one of them was something that the Eastern Orthodox would tell you is at the absolute center of spiritual development, the goal of the Christian life. And that is what they call deification, or in Greek, theosis. And what that means is that as you develop and grow in the spirit, as you mature in your humanity, as you discover more fully and clearly God's will and purpose for you, you become less unlike God and more like your true self. Father Thomas Keating, the great Trappist monk, says, "We are not God, but our true self is God." And while he is a Western Christian par excellence, that is a deeply and profound Eastern concept of what the goal of the Christian life is. Also, as Christian people understand the true nature of their humanity, remember, an Eastern Orthodox priest would be telling you continuously that you were made in the image and likeness of God. And that when we speak about our full humanity, it is growing more fully into that image and likeness. And therefore, they would say, as you do that and become more unlike God, you participate in God's holiness and eternity. And so it says something to them about what they might mean by the idea of eternal life. That all humanity remain, even after death, a distinct pattern of mental, spiritual, and emotional life that is at the absolute heart of the Christian hope and intimately connected with the way in which we understand all saints, both those living and those now with God. G.K. Chesterton, one of the great writers on the Christian life in the 20th century, said the communion of saints means giving votes to the most obscure of all classes, our ancestors. It is the democracy of the dead. The communion of saints refuses to submit to the small and arrogant oligarchy of those who merely happen to be walking around. In the Gospel for today, we heard Matthew's version of the Beatitudes. And these states of blessedness that he commends to his disciples are another way that we understand something about the nature of sanctity and the processes of God at work in the lives of faithful people. What I like so much about Matthew's version of the Beatitudes is that it owns up to the nature of the processes that each of us must engage in order to grow in holiness. Jesus speaks about the blessedness of the poor, who are people who are in a condition of genuine lack, but Matthew speaks also of the poor in spirit and the poverty of spirit that those who are humble, not self-deprecating, but who have self-knowledge about who they are and what their limits are and what their abilities and strengths are, know something about the need for God's grace. The Beatitudes constitute also a program for living that connects us directly to what Jesus meant by heaven. Most of us understand heaven in a way that is kind of cloud cuckoo land. We're going to go somewhere when we die. We go somewhere. Jesus is speaking about heaven now. And if you read these readings in their original language, you understand the kingdom of heaven is, in the Greek, right here. It's right next to you. It is the real world that interlocks with the world that we know. And as a person becomes more spiritually apt, and as communities begin to connect themselves with the promises of God, this unseen world now becomes visible in the world through the behavior and the practices of faithful Christian people. So you and I become instruments of the kingdom of heaven in the here and the now. It is also an affirmation that we live in a world not just governed by what's here, but by the invisible world too. If you think Christianity doesn't make sense, think for a moment in your own life how much invisible things govern your daily behavior, your minute-by-minute behavior, your thoughts, your feelings, your memories, your history. You can't see that. And yet it has profound influence on who you are and how you behave and what you believe about what you're going to be able to do as you seek to rise to the challenges and opportunities in front of you. The communion of saints and All Saints Sunday is a day to communicate this and to say this and to affirm this. Finally, last week I spoke about the importance of hope. And a person who is seeking to understand sanctity in their own life needs to see that hope is the process by which we live on a continual basis, believing that the promises of God can be available to us even in the midst of great adversity, turmoil, and ambiguity in our own lives. Honesty, openness, persistence, and enthusiasm. To be resolute in asking God to give us those internal strengths to meet the opportunities and challenges. So as we give, we go forward during the All Saints cycle, give thanks for all the people that you know in your own life who may only be known by you, that you hold close to your heart and up to God, and for the lessons of sanctity they have brought to you. Give thanks to God for the opportunity to be one of God's saints. Give thanks for the opportunity to do all of the things that are the fruits of the Spirit. Love, joy, kindness, peace, gentleness, self-control. You know, if all of us were to begin to see how important in big and small ways doing those things were for the health of the world, we wouldn't stop for a minute. Amen.